Hey, this is Julio Ricardo Varela from In the Thick and Latino Rebels Radio. And we're thrilled to share with you the first episode of a new podcast we've been producing here at Futuro Studios about the history of reggaeton music. It tells a true story about how young people from Panama, Puerto Rico, and beyond refused to be quiet and created an irresistible musical culture that has kept the world dancing. And it's hosted by one of the originators of reggaeton music herself, Evie Queen. The podcast is called Loud, The History of Reggaeton, and it's produced in partnership with Spotify. So the rest of the episodes are going to drop weekly only on Spotify. So if you want to hear more, head over to Spotify and click follow. And in the meantime, enjoy this episode of Loud, The History of Reggaeton.
Okay, picture this. It's 1995, and I'm about to have the most important audition of my life. An audition to rap with the hottest underground crew in San Juan. It was the moment that I was going to decide if I was gonna make it in the music or go back to my hometown as a nobody. So I show up at the spot. It's at DJ Negro's place, his home studio. When I walk in, all the guys are there in La Marquesina, and all of them are staring at me. And one of them call out, "¿Quién es esa mamabicha? Who the fuck is that?" I am dressed all baggy like a boy, you know me, pantalones ancho. That was my style back then. There are clouds of weed smoke. I see somebody leaving the studio looking kind of embarrassed. Just say, case five fuck up, DJ Negro will get on this big megaphone and scream, "Fuera! Y si la caga, te tienes que ir." So it's my turn. Ay, Dios mío, DJ Negro is at the consola. And he's like, "Show me what you got." Me pongo los headphones. I'm nervous as hell. But I'm not trying to show it, you know? So I do something kind of crazy. I turn my microphone around, turn my back towards Negro, and face the wall. I just let it loose.
Muchos quieren tumbarme y le digo, mira, no, no, que no van a poder. Si cuando canto la gente sabe que llegó la cuila nena del reggae.
Cuando terminé, I turned around. I'm not sure how I did. DJ Negro looked at me straight in the eye, con una cara bien serio, and say, "Felicitaciones. Congratulations. You're in." You could say that was the day that Evie Queen was born. Finalmente, I was at that place that I knew I belonged all along. Fue el comienzo de mi carrera that made me la diva, la potra, la caballota, la reina, and made me a household name.
Evie Queen.
I got a hell of a banger with Evie Queen on that record.
Everyone loved Evie Queen and still do.
Esa muchacha se paraba frente a los más grandes y los barría como si fuese una escobita, imagínate por aquí.
From that day on, I was one of the people who was part of creating a genre, una cultura. People who came from nothing and struggled and made something new, something fresh, algo bello, something for the whole world to dance. Que el mundo entero pudiera bailar. From Spotify Studio and Futuro Studios, I'm Evie Queen, and this is Loud, The History of Reggaeton. Episode 1, The Song. Today, reggaeton is the biggest music on the planet. We are at the top of the charts, arrasando con todos los premios del mundo.
And the Grammy goes to Bad Bunny.
And artists from everywhere are fucking with our beats. But a lot of y'all don't know the story and where this music really comes from. But don't worry, I got you. It's a story that touches on race.
You don't see black people in media. You don't see black people on television.
Sex.
El bellaqueo es la celebración de sentirnos sexuales y que alguien te lo aplauda.
About life in la calle.
You know, and a lot of projects came out of drug money. That was just the way, you know, that was the only way.
For some people, reggaeton is just party music. But the real story behind reggaeton is a story about la resistencia, resistance. About how kids who were young or poor, black or dark skin, kids who were discriminated against in every way, how we refused to be quiet, how we got loud. Take my story for example. I grew up on the west side of Puerto Rico, in a little town called Añasco. I wanted to be an artist since I was little, but I struggled a lot. After my parents get divorced, it was never enough money in the house. I would help my mother sell candies to help out. I left school to be a mom to my brothers and sisters. But at the same time, yo tenía tanto que decir. I have always had something to say. And so I started to rap on the street corners, then I battled in the project, then later at the underground clubs. Evitamos los guardias, the cops. We had to be cool with the drug dealers, but not too close. Tampoco te puedes quemar. We fight back against the rich people, los políticos, everyone who wanted us to stay in our place. Because we wanted to be heard, no matter what it took. In este podcast, we're gonna hear about some of the top artists in the game and the OGs who laid the foundation.
El General is like the blueprint, you know what I'm saying? You know, he's the one that took it to the next level. He blew up.
When Teo comes, he got the flow of Salsero.
He is Daddy Yankee forever, you know what I mean? He's the boss.
Y escucharemos exclusive interviews from the legends themselves.
Nosotros somos Sayo
Milena, Maluma, Baby.
Soy Tomás El Real.
Hey, what's up, guys? Yo soy Raúl Alejandro.
Mejor conocido como DJ Playero.
DJ Negro.
Mi nombre es Héctor Delgado Román.
And we are going to tell you the story of how we invented a whole new sound that was creative and sexy and turned the music industry on its head. We are going to spend time in Puerto Rico, New York, Colombia. But to tell the story right, we have to start in Panama.
People are under the wrong impression that reggaeton was born in Puerto Rico, and it was born in Panama.
This is El Chombo, the legendary Panamanian producer behind the Cuentos de la Cripta album.
Bienvenidos a la Cripta!
People think that reggaeton started out with Daddy Yankee from Puerto Rico. And no, actually it's from Panama, like a decade before.
And this is Sech, the most popular Panamanian artist of today in El Género.
Nosotros hicimos el reggae en español primero.
We did reggae in Spanish first, he said, even if others made it more commercial.
Otros lo trabajaron más y comercializaron y se hizo el reggaetón. Pero no sé, yo creo que es un tema bien complicado.
And he says, who did it first is a sensitive topic, especially for Panamanians. A lot of people don't give credit to the Panamanians, but it all started with them. If it wasn't for reggae and dancehall in Español, there wouldn't be no reggaeton. End of story. I still remember the first time I went to Panama in the mid-90s. I remember I was so excited to be at the birthplace of the music that I love. The home of artists like El General and Nando Boom. I remember seeing the canal from the plane. And Panama was dope. I remember the streets were full of people, full of life, and it was so multicultural. There were black people, Chinese people, Indian, Arabs, and of course, the music. Panama is el cruce de las Américas. It's this narrow little country that bridged between North and South America, between the Caribbean y el Pacífico, and you hear everything there. Salsa, merengue, cumbia, like anywhere else in Latin America, but also calypso, soca, music from Haiti, soul music. But there's one sound that is everywhere in Panama.
Reggae and dancehall that started in Panama.
This is Renato.
My name is Leonardo Renato Aldermora. To describe myself, Well, I was the first guy that started to sing and promote Spanish reggae.
You could say Renato is a true originator of our movimiento and the main character of our story today. And Renato, he got a lot of personality. When we interviewed him, he got on a B-boy tracksuit. He was wearing sunglasses indoors. And he tells stories a mile a minute.
It's different stuff that came in and make this big bam. And there it is, reggaeton.
There's also this thing about Renato that you have to know to understand where his music comes from. Because technically, Renato didn't actually grow up in Panama.
I came from the Canal Zone because I used to be on the part that, you know, used to belong to the USA in Panama, where the canal was and the army bases.
The Canal Zone was a tiny American-controlled area around the Panama Canal. His mother worked in the cafeteria of the U.S. Army base that was there. Y el Canal de Panamá, believe it or not, is very important to the story. So los Estados Unidos always wanted to have a canal between the Atlantic and the Pacific. And Panama was the best place to build it. Porque es la parte más pequeña. In 1904, they started working on it. And to protect the investment, the U.S. created the Canal Zone so they can have control around it.
But it's the Americans who matter now. Thousands of them live like colonial settlers in the neat little towns of the Canal Zone. A strip of land 40 miles long and 5 miles wide on each side of the canal.
This is a cheesy old clip about the zone. The whole place was made to look like a typical American suburbia, but right in the middle of El Tropico.
Compared with the bustling and not very orderly republic next door, the Canal Zone on the other side of the wire fence is neat and tidy and rather military. In fact, the whole place is run like a little bit of America.
And to build this little bit of America, they needed workers, preferably English-speaking. So they hire around 100,000 people, mostly from islands like Jamaica, Barbados, to help dig the canal.
We had a lot of Jamaicans. You know what I'm saying? We had a lot of Jamaicans.
And some of those Jamaicans were Renato's great-grandparents. After the canal was finished, those workers and their families stayed around for decades and decades. Families like Renato's.
You know what I'm saying? I was born in a nice, beautiful environment. We had a house. We had a lot of places to do sports. And I grew up nice.
But life was about to change for Renato. El trato era que in 1979, the Americans will return the Canal Zone to Panama, which means the West Indian families living in the zone will be out of jobs.
So my grandmother decided to move out and she came to Rio Abajo.
Rio Abajo was mostly a Black and West Indian neighborhood in Panama City. Many people from the zone moved there. And Renato did not like Rio Abajo at first. He got there when he was 17 and it was different. Instead of big American-style houses, it was crowded and cramped. People could get robbed in the street. And to make it worse, Renato could barely communicate with people.
My dad and my grandma and my mom, everybody used to speak English. Then I had to learn to speak Spanish.
Eventualmente, he settled in, and then he started to make new friends. Two friends in particular that are important in the story, Reguesan and Franquito. The way they describe it, para que tengan una idea of what these three kids have in common, that they were kind of nerds.
We were like the decent guys around the place in Riobamba. We were like the good kids.
Here's Reguesan talking about Renato.
So that's not even my friend, that's my brother.
And here's Franquito.
Así fue que empezamos todo, Renato, Sam.
Renato, Sam y Franquito, todos tenían abuelos and family from Jamaica and the islands. And the three friends have something else in common. They love reggae and dancehall music. In the early 80s, dancehall blew up in Renato's neighborhood.
When we started in Rio Abajo, they had a lot of discos, you know what I'm saying? And so middle-class Black people used to go to those discos. And whites too, you know, but more middle-class Black people used to go to the disco.
One of those sounds at the discos was dancehall. It was the new style of reggae that started in Jamaica in the late 70s, but it really took off in the 80s, the generation after Bob Marley. The style came out of little clubs in El Barrio known as dancehalls. That's where the name comes from. And compared to Bob Marley, it's like the drum and the bass went a little harder and faster.
It was good songs, you know, dance songs, because they had these rhythms.
Instead of singing, it was like, como ellos le llaman, toasting. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zen. Which is that half singing, half rapping style that artists like Yellow Man did. And if you have a start, you must have a end. Say 5 + 5. It sounds tan rico, tan sabroso. And while reggae roots was very political, dancehall was like a little more what Jamaican calls slackness. Songs about sex, partying, or songs about the regular life in the hood. Say if you have a paper, you pass me the pen. But tell your yellow man I'm too much girlfriend. Can't offer the matter, but me not have no girlfriend. Renato started tagging along to the discos that played reggae and dancehall with an older kid from the neighborhood who was a DJ. And one day, at 3 in the morning, his friend hands him the mic and tells him, go hype the crowd.
So he used to tell me like, hey, man, say something.
But when Renato grabbed the mic, he suddenly frees up and he can think of what to say. And his friend has to help him.
Tell women to, you know, move their butts and everybody lift their hands and, you know, do that stuff. I said, okay.
And Renato says the crowd is feeling him.
That's how it started, you know, and I start doing that stuff. So a friend of mine told me, hey, why don't you do it in Spanish?
Oh, my God. And when he hypes the crowd in Spanish, the crowd loves it.
And I am playing reggae. And I'm telling the people to lift their hands. This a hit.
That was the beginning of Renato's career as an MC and a DJ. After that moment, Renato y su grupo started to experiment with not just hyping the crowd, but performing the actual songs in Spanish.
We used to sing on top of the Jamaican rhythms.
That's Reguesam again, Renato's friend.
Or behind the side A was a side B, and side B was instrumental. So most of these Jamaican songs, we used to try to translate.
Kind of like this.
All who no beard from morning run go wola fresh. Go wola fresh, go wola fresh. All who no beard from evening run go wola. Get and turn it over in Spanish and say, Basa el baño en la mañana y estás fresco.
Wow, and Reguesan say because they came from West Indian families, it was easy for them.
We all speak patois. We all speak English. So we had the communication with reggae. Whatever you was hearing in English that you could not understand, we hit it back in Spanish and you could understand. So mostly, most of the music, that's what we was doing. Translating for the people to understand.
They didn't realize it, but these translations of songs at parties were the first steps in a new género known as reggae en español. And this is where the third member of their crew comes into the picture, Franquito.
Lo hacíamos con una pasión, nos encantaba. Nunca lo vimos como una forma de vivir, como un negocio, ni nada, ¿no?
Franquito was one of the best improvisers. He says Panamanians were great freestylers because they already had a tradition of doing calypso music, which was all about making up lyrics on the spot.
El calipso aquí era bien fuerte. De ahí fue donde realmente aprendimos a lo que es la improvisación.
Reguesam started to do dancehall shows in Spanish together with Franquito.
Some people used to call us Don Quixote y Sancho Panza because he was tall and I was short. So he was crazy on the stage.
Y así Reguesam y Franquito had their first gig at a party in a Panama City suburb.
And I could remember it was a Saturday night. It was old school reggae.
And Franquito was a sensation. This guy was going places.
He came out, he started taking his shirt off, Gertz was screaming, and he could have said something, go, you ever see the Black Presley? I'm the Black Elvis Presley, and he started, and they was just screaming.
But it wasn't only the girls losing it over their music.
But the guys would come like, they like it, but they get tough, like, yo, man, I like that, man, that was good. I like what you did.
The party was lit, encendido, and Reggae Sam started thinking, this dancehall in Spanish thing, maybe it could go somewhere.
Yeah, and then we start taking it serious.
The parties were fun and all, but this next part is where this new sound really started to spread. Reggae Sam, Franquito, and Renato, they wanted to get their music heard beyond the neighborhood. So they started recording on cassettes. And they selling them not only at the parties, but somewhere that they knew would take their music all over the town.
Renato and myself, we used to record a lot. And he used to sell the cassettes to the bus drivers.
It all went down on the buses. But these weren't any ordinary buses. These are the Diablos Rojos, Red Devils. Okay, gente, picture this. It's like an old American school bus painted in crazy colors that has lights, and it's all covered in murals.
Panama buses were beautiful. They used to put Michael Jackson's face on the buses, Mike Tyson, Roberto Duran, and they were beautiful with a lot of lights, you know.
And of course, big-ass speakers.
So everybody had these big equipments in the bus. And it was like you're having a party in a bus.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? But you wanted to be on that bus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though it was going to be full, I was going to be uncomfortable, it was going to be sweaty.
This is Raka Rich and Raka Doom from Los Rakas, a Panamanian-American duo based in Oakland. Even though they are from the later generation than Renato, they have the same experience on the Diablos Rojos buses.
Every route had different styles of music, you know what I'm saying? So this one route would have like nothing but old school reggae music playing, but the mix was so good that before you leave the bus, you're like, hey homie, what mix was that?
So then you go down to the street to the people hustling cassettes and request the mix from that bus.
Yo, where could I get the Tanda El Bus from this route? You know what I'm saying? I want this route, I want that route.
The music was so good that people would get up into the aisle and start dancing right in the middle of their commute. And back in the 80s, well, Renato was so smart, he would record and personalize songs for specific bus drivers. Like one driver wanted his own hype songs for his route.
These guys call me, hey, the bus driver wants a song. I said, what? Yeah, he wants a song saying that he's the best bus driver. I said, okay.
And so Renato makes the song for the driver, get paid, and then his phone keep ringing.
Then all the bus drivers get, hey, I want a song. And they just say, hey, I want a song.
And soon, he wasn't just very popular only with the bus driver. His music wins the love and the heart of the people riding in the buses. It spread, honey.
That's how it got so famous, because it was like it was a radio station.
Through the buses, Renato y su música traveled from city to city all over Panama. The bus routes promoted and spread a new innovative sound, Panamanian reggae en español. Reggae Sam, Franquito, and Renato, these three guys whose families were West Indians from the Canal Zone, was just teenagers having fun. But little did they know, they were creating a new sound, one that will grow and grow over the years. But Reggae Sam say that not everybody in Panama got it.
Especially the community, not the Black community, but the Spanish community. Didn't like, they used to say, what music is that? Where it's from? Oh, that's Black people music?
Or they call it something else.
Música de chombo.
Mi gente, chombo is a word very specific to Panama. It started as a slur for black people of West Indian descent.
Back in the day, it was considered as the N-word. Black folks used to consider it offensive, very offensive.
That's El Chombo again, who took the word as his artist name.
And the origins of the word is pretty hard to pinpoint exactly where it came from. Back in the day, around the early 1900s, thieves in the Panamanian Canal Zone area used to jump fences after they committed their crimes. And the police used to call them jump boys.
So jump boy became chombo and became a bad word to talk about black people. Listen, there are other stories about where the word comes from. That's just one. Getting called chombo was kind of a thing that black Panamanians had to deal with on the daily. In general, they got discriminated against a lot for being black and also for having English-speaking roots. They were sometimes treated as if they don't belong to Panama, even though their families had lived in Panama for generations. Over history, West Indian Panamanians have their citizenship denied or taken away. At one point, politicians even want to kick out the community from the country. For black kids, dancehall and reggae became a kind of defiance, a way of saying, like, we're going to be as black as we want.
Porque yo en ese tiempo también tenía rasta.
This is Franquito, the third of the three friends. He and the others grew out their dreadlocks, like making their connection to Jamaica plain for all to see. And it got a reaction.
Habían veces que algunos buses pasaban, no nos recogían los taxis.
He says buses and taxis wouldn't pick them up. La gente tenía miedo de los dreadlocks. And the cops would literally stop them and cut their dreadlocks off.
Y cuando íbamos a tocar así a la fiesta, que salíamos de la fiesta, nos agarraban los policías. Y nos cortaban el cabello y era el racismo en ese tiempo, era un racismo impresionante.
Y todo ese racismo, that racism, they put that into the music and talk about it on the mic. Reggae San says he understood dancehall and reggae as a kind of resistance. It's music that says, sí, soy negro, y orgulloso.
It's an honor. Pride for me is that I could identify myself as a black West Indian, black Panamanian. What's that you sing in this music? Because it's the only way that black, poor, struggling people used to protest, to fight against the government.
So it's not a coincidence that when Renato released his first real record, it was a diss for the police.
¿Quién es la policía?
Here's how it happened. Renato was working as a DJ, throwing parties, when one day he heard a dancehall song that really stuck with him.
And I heard the song, What the Hell the Police Can Do. And what the hell the police can do, I can do that.
It was a Jamaican song against police brutality.
And I said, I'll do something like that.
Yes. And so, in the mid-80s, Renato released a cover of the song in Spanish called El Denny. It was one of the first studio recordings of a reggae en español song. See, for decades, Panama was controlled by military governments. And the Denny were the secret police agents of the generals.
Well, at the time, Denny, everybody was afraid of the Denny because they were the hard cops. They would break down your doors and go in your house and stuff.
In the song, Renato impersonates a Denny officer and is not flattering. So basically, he say, I can cuff you and hit you with a baton. Then he's calling the cops albino, pointing out that it was white cops that would target the black kids. It was a diss, but a diss that you could dance to. Reggae San remembers what El Denny meant for the new genre.
El Denny, it was a huge radio play porque era una novedad. All we had in reggae.
That same year, Renato drops su próximo hit.
I made the first reggae that hit in Latin America, La Chica de los Ojos Café.
Es la chica de los ojos café, y es mi chica de los ojos café, y es la chica de los ojos café.
So I made this song about soap opera, you know, novelas, we call it novelas, and they put it in the buses, and it was a big hit.
I love it, I love it. In this song, he refers to the novela that he used to watch with his grandma, including one called La Chica de los Ojos Café, The Brown Eyed Girl. In the video, he make it clear that his brown eyed girl isn't one of the blancas you've seen on TV. Instead, por supuesto, he put a black Panamanian woman in the video, like kind of making another statement, his own statement. La canción blew up all over the radio station in Panama, and eventually other countries in Latin America también.
The song is in Colombia selling, and it was number one for about, what, 1 year number one. And we, what? In Colombia?
Renato made the first ever reggae en español hit and set the whole genre into motion. Pero, to be honest, a lot of people have forgotten about him. Here's Raka Rich from Los Rakas.
But even though we are the creators of the sound in Panama, of the genre, I feel like people still don't know that Panamanians were the ones who started the whole thing.
Raka Rich still gets frustrated about it.
When you create something and, you know, you don't capitalize on it and other people capitalize on it, it doesn't feel good. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like, you know, what they say about, you know, the vultures. You know, people come and they see what you do and then they maximize out of it. And everybody, you know, even though you created it, nobody knows who you are.
And gente, that's the truth. Without Renato and the other original artists from Panama, there wouldn't be no reggaeton. But Renato isn't bitter about that, just the opposite. And when he looked back, it's just amazing that an English-speaking kid from the Canal song will be so important to starting reggae en español.
And I love it. You know, I'm so happy, man, because you did something that everybody's going to talk about it for years. And we are so glad. I'm glad, man. I'm glad for Daddy Yankee. I'm glad for Ivy Queen. I'm glad for all these artists that are making it.
Muchísimas gracias, Renato. I am so glad, too, and proud of your work. Renato is one of the OGs, but there's so many more we're going to hear about in this season of Loud. You will find out how reggaeton caught fire from Panama to New York to Puerto Rico to Colombia.
Wow, man, that thing took New York by storm.
It came to a moment where if you wanted to be big, you had to go to Colombia, get a couple of hits big in Colombia, and from there you would jump around the world.
We will take you from the sweaty club.
You feel the music and the beat at the door.
To the fancy award shows.
They go come on stage with the fucking beige pimp suit.
The MTV award stage is different. It's like we have arrived, world.
We will go behind the scenes of the biggest hits.
Gasolina is an idea that literally when we first heard it, at first we almost laughed.
Mira, Rakata es un timbal. Can, ca, can, ca, ca, can, can. Can, ca, 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 can, can.
And give it to you straight about the real shit that went down.
I mean, guys would go from literally, you know, riding the bus to get to the studio to having a BMW overnight. And then the BMW wasn't enough.
Everybody having a good time. De momento, boom, policía de Puerto Rico. Man, I think that's about what happened right here.
I mean, the Napster MP3 era was the worst time. Like, everybody was in bankrupt. Everybody.
All our friends from the beginning, they're all dead.
this shit is here to stay. I was like, this is completely, completely, completely gonna change the landscape of music.
Todo eso y mucho más. But first, back to our group of three friends in Panama. In 1985, Franquito, the tall one in the group of friends, broke some news to Reggae Sam.
Oh, Sam, I said, guess what? He said, I'm going to America.
He got a scholarship to study in New York, where his mother was living.
I said to him, you know what? You better perform and do it. He said, man, I'm going to try to do that. And if I make it big, you're coming with me.
Once in New York, Franquito will choose a new artist name for himself. One that you probably heard of. He will call himself El General.
Me pusieron el nombre El General porque siempre andaba improvisando y el comando máximo aquí en Panamá era un general, El General Torrillo, me pusieron.
He's considered the father of reggaeton.
El General is like the blueprint, you know what I'm saying? You know, he's the one that took it to the next level. He blew up.
Próxima parada. El General get on a plane from Panama to JFK, where Spanish language dancehall revolution is about to take place.
It's Jamaican music produced in New York and performed by Latinos, you know, so it's hot.
Like in Panama, you get a little bit of it, but when you came over here, you was more in it, you know?
Forget it. I was, oh my God, I came from New York. What's up? With the outfit, with the new music. Say, hey, listen, this is the new stuff.
Next time on Blau, the history of reggaeton. Blau, the history of reggaeton is a Spotify original podcast from Futuro Studios. This podcast was written and reported by Marlon Bishop and Luis Gallo and edited by Sofia Paliza Ka, with help on this episode from Audrey Quinn. From Spotify, executive producers Gina Del Bac, Adrian Arredondo, Jessica Molina, and Julio A. Pavon, with producing help from Dan Behar. Executive produced for Futuro Studios by Marlon Bishop. Produced by Catalina Gata Eccleston, Hermes Ayala, Joaquin Cutler, Sandra Riaño, Nicole Rothwell, and Daniela Tello Garzón. Additional production by Cristian Herrera, Sebastián Nerváez Núñez, Ezequiel Rodríguez Andino, and Juan Diego Ramírez. Fact checking by Tatiana Díaz. Sound design and mixing by Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie Lebeau. Our theme song is by Max. Original music by Echo and Danny Crazy Town for the Echo team and Impulse El Intelectual. Music supervision by Big Sin. Yours truly recorded at Haga Studio by Maluri Invernon. El General interview audio courtesy of Christoph Twickel. Special thanks to Julio Ricardo Varela, Luis Luna, Liliana Ruiz, Josh Lindgren, Antonia Cerejido, Alejandra Martinez, Sonia Clavel, Ricardo Montalvo, Yasmina Fifi, O'Neill Anderson, Jessica Diaz Hurtado, Kimu Elolia, Sarah Gaynor, Vijan Garvey, Jesse Hart, Sue Lu, Brian Marquis, Lauren Meinke, Ashley Nesby, Andrea Silenzi, Wei Slitkin, and Jordan Tochinski for production support. I'm your host, Ivy Queen. Make sure to follow Loud, the History of Reggaeton, only on Spotify.
Futuro.
Chan, chan, chan. Thank you, Shade. Tea.